What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me today is somebody who I felt just deserved to be here. You know, he's been sending me so many emails, so many messages, like, Nick, I demand to go on the show. Why would you never bring me on? It's Eno Saris. Eno, great to see you.
Good to see you. That was a fun first pitch that we had. We were
so good.
Throwing fastballs and jump shots and my hitting is behind my
pitching. Did you hit 80 mile per hour fastballs?
No. But one thing I did realize was I did the 60 and 70s and they were easier for me than the 50 because I think I have okay bat speed. I actually did the K vest. The K vest is like this thing that you wear and it tells you how your body moves and if you're moving in the right sequence and stuff. And the sequence said that the K-Vest said I had near pro hand speed. So the 50 was actually really hard. I kept missing it. And I was like, the only time I could finally hit it was like, I was like, wait,
right.
Wait.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like the ultra prototype. I think I gave you, you kept swinging too soon on that. I don't know if you played it at first, but Arizona, but everybody's like swinging way too early. And also, I think you just wanted to brag today. You told me you got to do this podcast today. We got to make it quick. You just want to brag that you're like near pro hand speed.
That's right.
That's right. It.
It's also said I had minus pelvis, though. So
that's not the one I would advertise a lot. I could just hold on to that one. A few things. One, I'm wearing my Imanaga because he did accept the qualifying offer. So that's really cool. Love that for him. But we actually got some trade news an hour ago. Sonny Gray going to the Red Sox, Brandon Clark and Richard Fitz going to the Cardinals. Your very quick take on this, Eno, because of course we got to talk about your mock draft.
I expected to see that Sonny Gray would be striking out the entirety of the right-handed hitters with that great sweeper, the breaking balls that he has. But last year he struck out more lefties than righties as a percentage. And so I think that's a good sign that, you know, he still has what it takes to get both sides out because we know that sweeper is one of the best in the game. Expected to say that because, you know, righties have an advantage in Fenway. And I thought if he could shut down righties, then the park wouldn't be as big a deal for lefties. Either way, I do think that park is a big deal, and he is 36. Last year, the overall numbers, the underlying numbers were better than the overall numbers, but I wouldn't expect like a full regression to the mid threes that he's always had. I think my expectation for him is like a 3.7 ERA maybe, and all the strikeouts. So still a underrated draft, I think, coming into the season.
And how do you feel about the two guys that they sent over, Richard Fitz and Brandon Clark?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't Fitz's best pitch a sweeper?
Yes. I think he's still kind of figuring himself out, right? He showed one thing in the spring and then he didn't get many opportunities. It was very much of a yo-yo and he's been hurt. And it's kind of hard to figure out what he is yet. He had a wider arsenal than we expected to. So. Yeah. If you have a sweeper they throw regularly, that's generally going to be your best pitch, right?
At least by the models, yep.
Right. So we'll see how that turns out for him.
Yeah, he did throw six pitches, although the change 3% of the time. But, you know, it is such fits and starts. Ooh, a different kind of...
it's really with fits. It's just stay healthy and pitch regularly. And that's the good news about this because the Cardinals... I mean, I put out a tweet that, yes, maybe suggested way too heavily on the could part of the tweet that Brandon Clark could be in the rotation in the first half of this year and probably not considering he only pitched in the high A, was drafted in 2024. That said, Matthew Liberatore and Michael McGreevy are really the only locks from last year's rotation, which opens the door for, obviously, Richard Fitz right out of the gate as long as he's healthy to be in that rotation. And of course, it will be some discount free agent going to St. Louis, I'm sure, this offseason.
I mean, it would be tempting to put Fitz on a bunch of sleeper lists because he's a St. Louis pitcher and he has more stuff, you know, than the other two that are already in place. Mm-hmm. But one thing that is interesting is that he stands at sort of the crossroads of when when stuff plus is more meaningful and when something like strikeouts minus walks is more meaningful.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he has given us, you know, hundreds of pitches in the big leagues. And, you know, for the first sort of 300 to 500 pitches, Stuff Plus is at its most powerful. And he's got 1,000 pitches in the big leagues. So at this point, strikeouts minus walks might tell us a little bit more about who he is. And sure, he really hasn't struck out guys at the level that you might expect given his stuff.
Right.
So unless they, and the Cardinals aren't necessarily known for their pitching coaching. So when you look at a projection that says, you know, 20, 22%, whatever, below average strikeout rate, that might be who he is. And so,
yeah, I mean, it's tough. We don't know who Richard Fitz is yet. He doesn't know who he is yet. Because last year we saw varieties of who he is, and he was dealing with injury coming up, coming down. We saw different looks, and he's been this big mystery of, okay, we know that you should throw hard and should throw many pitches, but what are you actually going to settle into? And the good news is that Richard Fitz is going to start if healthy and going to be starting regularly. It is also a good place to be a pitcher. Yes, maybe the wind's not as much as others, but the volume should be there. The defense and park is generally very good for him. And I like going after guys on the Cardinals at a discount because they generally, yeah, they go 5-6 innings more often than other organizations. So
I think they should generally be in the same sort of tierage, Fitz, Liberatore, and McGreevy. Do you have an order? I would say
Liberatore first just because he's just had a full season. We know his situation a little bit better.
Lefty. We like lefties.
Oh, lefty swatches, you know. Shout out Scott Pianowski. You sent me a nice message this morning about swatch. Love that man. But Liberatore doesn't have as good of a swat, like a changeup, I don't believe. But McGreevy is a fun ground ball guy. He's a fun streamer to me. Not really a guy I want to really rely on because he's not.
I think Fitz is in between just because if it works out, there's actually a place where it works out. He's better than Liberatore, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. But, yeah. I think the unknown is what makes me say I'm more out because again, health has been his problem. And I would be like, all right, let's just, I know I'm going to get this with Liberatore. Now Sonny Gray and Brandon Clarke. Brandon Clarke, high A draft pick of 2024. We haven't seen him a ton. He has a great fastball. That's pretty much right enough from the left side. I can't really tell you much more than that right now. I don't have stuff metrics and all because it's high A plus ball and not triple A, which is so annoying. And I will bang the table endlessly until we get that data. But who knows with the Cardinals? Maybe Quinn Matthews is healthy. Maybe Tink Hentz is good enough to do, or Tekoa Roby. Leahy could be in that rotation out of the gate, right? So there's a lot of different things at play with it. I wouldn't really consider Brandon Clarke much of a thing for this year, but who knows? He'll be likely in double A soon enough. And then from there, it's always possible he can get the call. Do you agree with that with Brandon Clarke?
I'd heard that he was much better before some injury than he was after.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was averaging, you know, 3 1/3 innings per start, and you know he had good K minus BB, and then he had like a blister issue. So I'm happy that that's the injury. I feel like that's right. That's a doable injury.
Yes.
And so I think this is the kind of deal that they had to make. Also, Sonny Gray's contract was wild.
Yeah, we kind of knew when they made it, right? That it was so backloaded.
God. Yeah, because there was a buyout on a mutual option because mutual options never get used. It was basically $10 million at the end of the contract, plus they had backloaded it. So it was like a $35 million contract for 1 year, plus a $10 million buyout coming next year. So it was $45 million for this 1 year, plus it's $45 million on the cap. So the Cardinals had to pay $20, $25 million of cash to get these prospects. But I think it's better that they did spend that cash and get prospects rather than prioritize money, because at this point in their rebuild, they would rather have prospects.
Absolutely. And the last very bit here is Sonny Gray in Fenway. I think it's a better situation for him in St. Louis. I do have some worry that the lights of Boston might affect him more. Also, it's nice in St. Louis where they aren't going to tinker with him too much. The Red Sox might. The Yankees, I mean, the quotes I heard from Yankee land messing with Sonny Gray were hilarious, but I don't think the Red Sox are going to suggest the same things. Still, I don't know how much of that's really going to work as a fit for them. At the same time, wins should be better. And his ability to get out lefties is because of the sweeper, because he somehow was so good at going down and under the nitro zone to lefties with the sweeper consistently. His put away rates have been higher than expected, especially in 2024. And the strikeout rate dip in 2025 for Sonny Gray was due to the backdoor sinker to right-handers not being a 40% put away rate, which, if you know, put away rate is just laughable. You never see like above a 22% put away rate on a sinker, let alone 40%. So yeah, kind of what he was last year. I don't really expect there to be much of an improvement from that. And as you were saying, could be a little bit of a hit on the ratios. So more wins, but that's about it with Sonny Gray. Okay, we got to talk about your draft. All right, I know that was a fun little tangent. We're going to go quicker with this one. Eno doesn't have too much time, and neither do I, but we wanted to get through this. And I know we've talked a lot about some of these players already, so I'm probably going to go easily through them. You had the number one pick, Aaron Judge. If you want to take Ohtani, guys, instead, go ahead. You took Judge for what reason in 5 words?
This is really good.
Yep, and he's really good, and then ha, and then ha.
Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah. I took the slot, though. I had the choice, I think, of maybe the turn or number one, and that was just an easy one. If you look at projections, if you look at value from last year, like, Judge is just very clearly the number one player in baseball as a hitter. So,
and not to mention Ohtani.
And we had split Ohtani, right?
Yes. It's funny, they both come up as DH and they're not. The second one is obviously the starting pitcher. But Ohtani, the DH, next year should be a little bit worse considering he's going to be starting more. And we generally believe that, okay, maybe he doesn't DH those games, or if he does, should be some small dip in performance considering he has to have the extra workload of pitching.
Yeah, and before his amazing, maybe best game of all time, he had like a 700 OPS as a hitter on days he started. So. Ha!
Right. Oh my gosh, that was insane. now you went with the turn here. So I'm always going to group them in two. It was Jazz Chisholm and Hunter Brown, the second and third round. And what was your thought process with these picks?
Well, I thought that this draft might have a Nick Pollock tinge to it.
You went the anti-Nick Pollock?
I did. And it came up a couple times. I'll detail the anti-Nick picks. But Hunter Brown was one. I just really liked the combination of how good he is plus how much he is. I feel like he is one of the guys that, of course, I'm going to say this, he's getting hurt this year, but like, you know, I felt really good about the innings. I wanted to have an A-plus innings guy at the beginning. And, you know, in the third round, I felt like that was a good spot. Now, I don't know if it was the third or the fourth. One of these picks, Austin Riley went right after him.
Seventh round.
Yeah. And
I remember you were swearing inside of the chat. And I was like, please, this is pitcher list. You can't do that.
I just this was a draft where I had no values, no auction values. I was going off of last year's earned auction values, which is such a problem because you haven't done any regression. You haven't, and all
of
the
course,
players.
Yeah, I mean, we're going in blind. Yeah.
Yeah. So the Austin Riley one hurt me. But with Hunter Brown, I was like just looking around and thought, you know, I'm going to get a stud pitcher here. I know everybody else is waiting, but I love Hunter Brown and I've already got two hitters.
I'll be honest with you. I need to, I've actually said to myself that I'm going to circle some special time just to watch more Hunter Brown because I have an impression already. I've watched some already, but it's, I got to really just scrutinize as much as I can the good starts, the bad starts, just a little bit more because clearly like I missed something. With Hunter Brown, yes, the increased velocity this year was something I didn't expect. At the same time, there's still that lack of dominant secondary that destroys me. And the four seamer and sinker should not be as good as I would think. But I need to watch a little bit more and really just kind of see how.
I think it's just the best Triforce.
Well, it's dead zone movement though is the problem.
But it's a really good Triforce. I mean, it's really, they just play off.
Why I get, I mentioned the worst comp ever that people mention all the time, but I still kind of stand by it, which was that stupid Mitch Keller one as the ultimate floor of Hunter Brown, because he has the same thing of the cutter, four seamer and sinker of.
Well, I will be upset if I,
that is the ultimate floor. And I've never stated that I expect him to be Mitch Keller. I even remember the first time saying, he's like, I'm really sorry to make this comp and I don't want to. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, his K minus BB last year was, it was good, you know, 20%. It's close to, you know, close to Yamamoto's, but it wasn't like Gilbert, Sale, Green, you know, Otani, Skubal, Crochet. Like all those guys have 24, 25, 26 plus.
Right. So, and I think what you're really leaning in on here is that, well, yeah, but he's in a really good team context. Yeah. And he's going to be that.
It seems like a horse. A lot of those other guys that I mentioned, you know, if I take Chris Sale first, you know, I'm worried about innings with my next pitcher and so on and so forth. That's why I felt like I didn't have to worry about innings going forward. And I could take guys that I wasn't sure about the innings.
Now, I do have to mention the K minus BB dropped to 15%. In his final 11 games, as it slowed down with the strikeouts, he had two games above six strikeouts in those 11 starts. I kind of attribute it a little bit to fatigue because it was his largest innings total of his career, right? 170 to 185. But it was a little bit like, okay, this is a little bit more of the guy.
But Stuff loves that curveball. And so I kind of think there can be another act where he's like, okay, I'm going to start throwing the curveball more. And he also has like a mid-90s slider. So I don't think he can't spin it. I think he just was doing so well with one approach that maybe he needs to get hit in the nose again and he, you know, starts using the breaking balls more.
Right. All right. And Jazz Chisholm makes sense. Second baseman with dual threat, homers and
second base, by the way, is just an awful, awful position this year. I really hate it. And it's either go big with Marte or Chisholm or identify a sleeper late. And then this time I was just like, screw it.
You know, I'm not going to do that. I was hoping for Jackson Holliday, but you know, I didn't know where it was appropriate to take him because especially me relative to everybody else, I have not a good thumb on the pulse of hitters. And I'm like, how do you guys feel about Jackson Holliday? I don't want to look stupid. Okay. Four and five, you went CJ Abrams and free agent Edwin Diaz. Now, I actually understand the Edwin Diaz. You might think like, oh, this is the anti-Nick Pollock. No, I actually have leaned a little bit more into possibly going for a...
Yeah, but it was a bad pick.
What's
it was
that?
A bad pick. It was a bad pick.
Oh, it was a bad pick.
I think so. Mason Miller didn't go for like another round.
Well, he went before your next pick.
Okay.
It went in the beginning. Yeah. You took at the beginning of the fifth, Edwin Diaz.
I was a little bit nervous that San Diego might try to stretch Mason out. I know that Mason has said that he doesn't want to stretch out unless he has a financial guarantee.
Yeah. Which is really smart for him to say that because he's found his
ticket. Yeah. I just like the idea of, you know, in 12 team drafts, I really love when I can get what I think is the best at a position.
Yeah. Yeah, best in slot.
That's what I was hoping to do there. Mason Miller might be the best, but you know, either way, I got number one or number two. It just felt like, you know, I don't know. Do you have the draft in front of you? I do.
I sent it to you over Twitter as I said I would.
But I have to
just kidding with you. Yes. What's your question, Eno?
The clicky draft. There it is. So I had the choice. If I had not taken Diaz, it goes one, two, three, four, five. So I could have taken Jacob DeGrom. I could have taken Chris Sale. DeGrom.
Andrew Green, Max Fried.
Yeah. I mean, and then I would have been leaning into my strategy of I'm going to have a better pitching staff than y'all. Right. Like I took Hunter Brown in the third and I'm going to take and so I should have taken DeGrom or Hunter Green there, I feel like.
And then you could have gone Andres Munoz or Yoán Duran in the seventh instead of Joe Ryan, theoretically.
Yeah. The other thing, though, that was happening around me was that first base was disintegrating.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I was looking at was like, oh, I need a first baseman. I need a closer. And so when I looked at first baseman, Vinny Pasquantino, Josh Naylor, and Tyler Soderstrom were left. And I liked all three of them. And so I said, all right, I'm gonna let first base go and hopefully I get one of those guys back. I got the last one back, Soderstrom.
But that's what you always want. You always want the bottom of a tier. You don't want...
Right. I do feel better about him than like Spencer Torkelson or Michael Bush or Kyle Manzardo, the guys who went after it. So I got like what I think is the last acceptable starting first baseman in this league.
Sure.
But I could have done Hunter Green, Tyler Soderstrom, and waited another round and still gotten what color are closers here?
I mean, so there's also Munoz and Duran, Cade Smith.
Although that's coming back. So I could have gotten Hader, I guess. I could have gotten Hader way later.
Yeah.
I think it was a mistake. I think the Diaz pick was a mistake.
Okay. CJ Abrams, though, was your fourth round pick.
You know, you have to get a top 10 shortstop in a 12-team league.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, they went fast. And, you know,
this is the way I think it should go, though, because top of the line hitters are, I think, scarcer than they usually are. And the middle of pitchers is wider than usual, too. So what you're going to see a lot, especially in a 12-teamer, is you are going to see the first six rounds filled with hitters, and then 7 through like 16 are going to be pitchers.
Yeah.
It's just going to be the natural progression of it. So it's important to figure out.
That's another thing, you know,
which are the positions you really want to focus on earlier on.
Right. Yeah. That was second base and shortstop and first for me.
Okay. We're going to talk about your next two pitchers, which are the 7th and 8th round, and we're going to talk about them after this break. Start of the 7th round, I was really upset because I, as you guys know, wait, and I hadn't gotten a starting pitcher yet, and I was really hoping that Joe Ryan was going to fall because I think he's so underrated every year. Everyone considers him, oh no, the ERA, the home runs. Your home runs should come down. Whip is always amazing. Strikeouts are always amazing. He goes deep into games. Oh, you got Joe Ryan. How dare you?
You could still end up a Met too.
Yeah, he's probably not going to be with the Twins next year.
Kind of feel that way. Plus, you know, where he went. So I took Joe Ryan in the 7th. You took Kyle Bradish as their first starter. The next starter was Jacob Mizorowski. I like Jacob Mizorowski. And the starter before Joe Ryan was Freddie Peralta and Spencer Schwellenbach. You know, I like Schwellenbach a lot, but he's coming off of injury. Freddie is, you know, kind of the tail of two halves a lot. You know, he has great halves and not so great halves. Joe Ryan just seems super steady. I was like very happy to get him as my number two. I was like, oh yeah, like I feel very steady. Now, maybe I lack some upside, which I'd try to attack later, but I was like, my 1-2 were steady.
I mean, I was saying this with Eric. I think the major thing with your first pitchers is make sure you don't fall too far behind on strikeouts. Remember, this is a head-to-head league. I do want to mention, and it's Yahoo setting, so 3 outfielders, 2 utility, no middle infield and no corner infield. But you can't really reclaim strikeouts deeper in the draft because you just won't get the strikeout volume, essentially. And that's where you can fall behind, I think, more so with pitchers. When chasing upside necessarily, it's not really the thing you need to do. You need to really just make sure you have quality volume is always the answer of some kind. And it's funny you say Jacob Mizorowski. I'm really shocked, everyone, that a guy like Jacob Mizorowski with, I don't know what 99th percentile stuff is, someone that, you know, likes. I'm shocked.
Yeah, of course.
I found myself actually kind of maybe dropping Mizorowski down more because I'd have less security. Like, I would rather have Shane Bieber because I just feel like I'm going to get more volume that's just quality than I am with Mizorowski. Still too much of a mystery, as much as I absolutely love how absurd he is.
I have Shane Bieber just right after Jacob Mizorowski. I have a little bit of, I have the hype tier.
Yeah.
Yuri Perez, Chase Burns, Nolan McClain, Cam Schlitter, Jacob Mizorowski, Treya Savage, and Tetsuya Imai in that order right now. And that's just my mid-20s. And then the start of the 30s is my like boring veterans that I like. Pepio, Pavetta, Bieber, Gossman, Eovaldi, Bradish. So
Bradish and Bieber are below or after those guys.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have another podcast talking about that one because that's a fun conversation.
All my hype guys, because they have great stuff.
I'm not the exciting one. I'm like, no, boring, good old brah.
Yeah, I know. But all my hype guys, because they have great stuff numbers, have really low projections in Oopsie. So I kind of feel like I need one of those. Now, I don't think I'm going to take 2 bites of the apple because it's going to be an expensive apple to bite out of. But I kind of, this year, I kind of want one of those hype anyway ones. And in this draft, I didn't get the hype one because I came back with Blake Snell, who, you know, kind of fits in with the hype guys. And I have Blake Snell.
It's the mystery box of like, all right, but maybe this is it. You know, you see how it worked for like a couple games. Like, oh, but I mean,
he wins a Cy Young every couple of years, right?
This is the thing. I have had the same conversation about Blake Snell for 4 years.
Right. We don't need to have it again.
It's the same thing. And I don't understand how we just can't accept that Blake Snell is likely, very likely. So 80% of the time, one out of every 5 years, he's not going to do this. Yeah. But 4 out of 5, he's going to be pretty bad for 3 months. Like not playing or just pretty bad. And
yet he's still he's so good at the rest of the time that he ends up the year, like his last 4 years, his combined ERA is like a 3.
I better than that. It better be better than that if I'm only getting half of a season of it. But for me, it's just the anxiety as a manager. I just don't deal with this.
Well, I the reason I did deal with it is that I thought I'd been so steady Eddie on my other ones. I mean, I thought, here's a guy that I have in my top 20 of my rankings that has fallen to me. And I was fairly risk averse with my first two picks. So I thought, here, I'm going to step into some risk here.
I'm actually surprised you didn't go with my 10th round pick. And I was wondering if we were playing chicken with that, which is Dylan Cease. Because you could argue that Joe Ryan and Hunter Brown, I mean, actually, they are still volume 200 strikeout guys. But they aren't like the, I don't think either of us expect them to be the 20-30% for 190 innings next year, you know, 200 or so. While Cease is like the ultimate, hey, you get ratio focused ones before, now you need strikeouts, this is your option.
Yeah, that would have been that would have been a good addition, actually. And I don't have them that far apart in my ranks. So
yeah, I'm so curious to see where he ends up for you, because I don't know where to put him.
I've got him 22nd right now, ahead of the hype group.
That seems high, but also like reasonable. Yeah.
I mean, his ERA projection is for a 3.46 with a 29% strikeout rate. Like,
sounds right.
But I also, I don't know. Maybe I should have taken Cease there. That would have been interesting. But then once I took Snell, I was hurting a little bit and I had to go on a little position player.
Yeah, you had four hitters and four pitchers after 8 rounds. So you went Ozzie Albies to solve your what problem? You have Jazz as your third baseman? Second?
That's what I wanted to do. I thought after I lost Riley and got really mad, I also lost Westberg. I didn't really want Eugenio Suarez. There was Chapman and Paredes and Shaw. I thought all went a little bit too early. I didn't want to reach on a third baseman just to get a third baseman. So I thought, hey, Ozzie is interesting. If he's healthy, he pushes Jazz. And I did have a little bit of a thing where a lot of my guys have multi-eligibility. So
absolutely. Jazz
first outfield.
Yeah.
Jazz second, third. Ozzie second. O'Neal Cruz second outfield. Yeah. Shortstop outfield, and Noelvi Marte I took later, a third in outfield. I don't love Ozzie Albies, but his contract year is coming soon. Like and I think his career is in the dumps a little bit. So if there's ever a year for him to kind of let's get this back on track, I think this could be it. And we've seen 30-30 type stuff from him in the past. So
right.
And then William Contreras, I was really happy to get him there. I think he was suffering from a thumb injury. He was projected to be the best catcher in baseball last year. So I expect him to be projected to be a top three catcher this year. So I was happy to get him there. O'Neal Cruz was like Ozzie Albies and then Lawrence Butler. So those are my four hitters in a row. This four was okay, the top guys at the position are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been safe, but this is a 12 team, so I'm just going to keep biting at the upside. Yeah. So if Ozzie Albies is healthy and plays well, then hey, I got a top 5 second baseman. William Contreras is healthy again. Oh, I got a top 3 catcher. O'Neal Cruz hits over 230, 240. Oh, I've got a top shortstop or outfielder. And then Lawrence Butler was hurt. He had knee surgery. I think that's as good an explanation as any as to why his year wasn't as good.
And of course, that park, it's a good situation to be in for Lawrence Butler. And we've certainly seen the high of that as we did in, I believe, 2024 when he had that nice run. We're going to move to pick 13 and 14. And to me, it's kind of funny. You have a four-letter first name and then an EO or Olo. It's Nick Lodolo and Luis Castillo.
That's right.
And Lodolo pick, I'm a fan of, because I think Nick Lodolo gets completely overlooked for what he did this past year. Watching him game to game, his command was as good as I've ever seen from him. I mean, this was one of the first times we've seen Nick Lodolo have a routine for many months of the year. Usually it's interrupted by injuries of some kind. And no, he was doing the swatch. He was changeups were working down and away to righties. He had the curveball working to both lefties and righties. And then the four-seamer and sinker were both upstairs constantly, often even jamming right-handers as well. I think that Lodolo, if he didn't have the worst schedule ever in September, would have had amazing numbers that really would have pushed them up into the top 10 rounds. I think 13 is absolutely a seal of approval from me. Great pick.
Yeah, I was really happy to get him there. I mean, a 27-year-old with a 20% K-minus BB, that's pretty good. You know, the best location numbers of his career, always had good stuff. I think all of it aligns pretty well. I don't love the park, but he survived in it before, and he really pushed the walk rate down. He's never had even like really an average walk rate. It was started around average, and now last year, 4.8% walk rate. I looked at the best deals of all time in pitching in free agency for rates and barrels, and they all had a 6% walk rate. And so I was like, I don't normally think about walk rate that much, but in this case, I was like, hey, this is good stuff.
That is fascinating. Wait, so just to clarify here, what you're saying is that the best value per dollar in free agency for whenever they signed a free agent pitcher, is that what you're getting a starting pitcher?
The two ingredients and were ones that I would never have expected. Okay. One was walk rate, and the other was innings.
Oh, not a surprise in the slightest for me.
Yeah, not I guess
at
so.
All.
I mean, once I saw it, I was like, "Oh, duh!" But
well, I would have probably said, "Oh,
you would have
Toby's.
Predicted that."
I would say it's Toby's. Huh? Toby's are undervalued also in the majors a lot. Of like, you get like the Tyler Anderson deal.
And no, but I'm talking about the big deals, the $200 million deals.
Oh, interesting. Okay, gotcha.
The problem is that like you know, there's only been sort of like 15 of these. So I was looking at top five, middle five, and bottom five.
Ah, I gotcha.
But the bottom five are all Steven Strasburg signs a $200 million deal and never pitches again, basically.
Oh yeah, right.
So there were, and then the Jacob deGrom deal in Texas is actually showing as a bad one.
Oh, interesting.
Because he only has five wins above replacement so far, and they paid him $185 million.
Well, right. I mean, one of those was... Oh, no. When did that start? It started the year before, right? Or 2 years before. And he essentially was a Tommy John lapse.
That's the thing. If you want to, you know, Scherzer deal is the best, and he was healthy the whole way through.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So. I mean, the Wheeler one, I would imagine, is really good, say, for, like, recently, but that's a really interesting thing I'm going to think a little bit more about. And Luis Castillo is the other one. I've been very doom and gloom with Luis Castillo as you paired with Lodolo here, simply because I feel that his secondaries are just going away and that he relied on the very best four-seamer command I've ever seen from him in the second half to keep his head above water. His fastball velocity is coming down. At the same time, great park and the volume is there.
I mean, I am not going to say that I love Luis Castillo. I just knew that I could get him for super cheap in this draft. Mm-hmm. I've got a 3.8 projection on him from Oopsie with, you know, maybe I use him more at home than on the road. You know, I think that's okay by the time that we're talking about my fifth pitcher.
It's a thing I wrestle with a lot of. So for example, let's say you get 200 innings or 180, whatever, of Luis Castillo at a 3.8 ERA. Is that good or bad for you? I would say that's bad in a 12 teamer.
If I got all of that 3.8,
I
would say that's about league average actually.
Right. Which I don't want.
You want to beat league average.
Right.
Which means that I would not start him in LA or in New York, you know, and I think that I could avoid I think I could shave 2 or 3 points off of that ERA just by avoiding certain places and favoring being at home.
So then that means that you're bringing the projection down to 120 innings, 130 innings of like a 3-3, 3-4.
And I just took Nick Vadolo, who I'm hoping to have 150 innings of a 3-3, you know? So like,
That's good. I'm like, it's helpful for me to get a grasp of like what that turns into. And then it's a little different than
taking
like
around Jack Flaherty at this point. Like, you know, I'm not taking him over things I'm more excited about. I'm not excited about Jack Flaherty.
Oh no, absolutely. I'm not necessarily criticizing this pick here. I'm more of just having the open conversation of how I should be mentally thinking about the guys I go for.
That's really complicated too, because in your rankings, are you specifically head to head or roto?
Sure.
You know, this is a little
mine are head to head. I say that up front.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I tend to play more roto. So I would think about him as 180 innings of 3-0.
That makes more sense for roto just for the volume of wins and strikeouts too.
But I also tend towards playing 15 team leagues where 180 innings of a 3.80 ERA is actually
great.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I would say Lodolo versus Castillo innings wise, it's different because when you miss Lodolo's innings, it's due to health, is what I would assume, not you benching him. Which means that opens up.
I did
a spot.
Ask the chat if we had IL slots right before.
We do have. We have actually now traditionally three of them, is what it is for standard leagues now. So that does change things too. It's a replacement value in addition. So that's kind of like the Blake Snell argument. Same thing with say Glasnow, is that it's them plus whoever we'd get on the waiver wire too.
I just the pairing of the two. So you know, upside. It was an upside and floor pairing.
Yeah, I dig that. We're going to talk about the end of Eno's draft in about, for about 10 minutes or so. And we're going to do so after this break. Okay, so Palencia was your next pick. And I imagine that is, okay, I need another closer. Here's my closer slot. I'm going to go with him for the Cubs. Hopefully that they don't sign another free agent.
Yeah, so 15 means I'm going that direction. So I took him ahead of Robert Suarez. I had circled Ryan Helsley as somebody I wanted. That's really interesting now because Ryan Helsley, there's this thing that he might start.
Right.
To me, I think I get it, in terms of modeling, I think teams that are model heavy will see Ryan Helsley and say, oh, he has a dominant slider and the curveball has a 130 stuff plus, and the fastball has a 105 stuff plus. If we take five, stuff numbers off of each of these, he could be a starter, right? He could be a Sonny Gray type starter where he just throws a bunch of breaking balls and has enough fastball to make it work. But given how shaky his season was last year, it's not a good platform here to be like,
no,
we're going to take this guy who was just had a 4-5 ERA as a reliever and make him a starter and like, announce that to your fans, like this is our plan. So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the cutter comes in. We loved it when he did throw it very rarely, Ryan Helsley. But we'll see. And
theoretically, I get it, but I also think he'll end up somewhere like San Francisco, where they need a closer.
Yeah,
And that's what I'm guessing. St. Louis has even talked about bringing him back. So, Fairbanks doesn't have a team now. I think he did have a team at the time, but. He could end up closing still. I hate Raisel Iglesias as a closer this year. Jeff Hoffman, I think, could lose his job to Louis Varland.
Don't you dare say that.
This is the grouping that we're in. The only one that I thought was acceptable other than Palencia was Suarez. And I just didn't know the team situation yet. And Palencia, I think, has the opportunity to strike more batters out. Suarez is our new Bobby fastball.
Ah, don't you dare say his name. There is a post type here in Nueve Marte, you could say, or maybe he actually had more of a breakout.
Oh, one last thing about Palencia.
Yes,
though.
Please.
The Cubs signed Phil Maitone.
Yes.
I don't think that he is at all a risk.
I wouldn't think so either. And I would imagine that making that signing reduces the chance of another reliever coming in and taking.
I think so too, because they gave him $15 million over 2 years. The comp for me on Maitone is Pierce Johnson, dude.
Oh.
Think about it.
Yeah, I mean, curveball. I don't think about either one much, but yeah.
I think that was a poor signing myself. I know that the on-field results are good, but you have to be really careful with on-field results for relievers because season is a completely. Is a short sample, you know? Yeah. And he had a 2.79 ERA with a 33% strikeout rate, 9% walk rate. Great. The year before, a 3.66 ERA with a 23% strikeout rate. That was the year before.
Yeah, so, I mean, he has his main pitch is a 76 mile per hour curveball.
Exactly. So that's why Pierce Johnson's my
cutter at 91. It's funny. I'm not going to beat around the bush here. I hear Phil Maton and I just think Phil Koch every time. It's just how I'm structured for whatever reason. They are the same. So I was like, oh, right. He is a righty. That's right. Now, Nueve Marte, is there anything you want to really mention with that one? It seemed like you wanted more options or more variety in case one of those other ones didn't work out for the infield.
I think so. Yeah. This is a situation where a lot of my outfielders that I picked are going to the infield. Like Jazz Chisholm was listed as an outfielder, but he's going to be my third baseman. Sure. Tyler Soderstrom listed as an outfielder. He's going to be my first baseman. Mm-hmm. And so I thought a utility person that could play third and outfield was ideal. Plus Novelby, like he had a league average strikeout rate. He had an above league average hard hit rate. He had really excellent bat speed. He stole 10 bases in basically half a season. I know there's the specter of this, you know, failed test looming over him, but he looked really good at the end of the year. And he even made like a game saving catch at the wall as an outfielder. So I think maybe getting him out of the infield and getting him just a full healthy season, I think there's real upside here. So there is upside chasing with the chance of him fixing a position if I screwed it up earlier.
I could not believe your 17th round. I want to let you guys know, Eno went with a starting pitcher with Connelly Early going next, then Kodai Senga, Zach Gallen, Mackenzie Gore, Zebby Matthews, Imai, Liberatore, Boyd on the board. Took Braxton, Ashcraft, and look, you know, I know it's an amazing slider. It's a really good slider, okay? It's also a four-seamer that has a 10% mistake rate, that has a sub 10% swinging strike rate. He also is not someone I really would call a command artist with what he does. Mm. And I also don't trust the Pirates to be so gung-ho about giving him the runway over others. He has one more option left, to be fair. Mike Burrows has zero. Then there's also Bubba Chandler. So in that respect, I kind of see him as the five. And then you have Yoan Oviedo, who I don't think is terrible. You have maybe something else coming in. I don't know. I just think that Braxton isn't... I would be surprised if he really turned on the Jets. But what do you see? You know, explain this to me.
I think when he added the sinker, everything changed. Without the sinker, I thought he was headed towards being a reliever, especially with the injury history. And he was headed towards being one of those, maybe even Pierce Johnson-esque type relievers.
What is it with Pierce Johnson today? Okay. What?
Cause he is
he deserves better.
It was like 40% breaking balls. You know, it's like, I thought he'd be like a guy who led with his breaking ball. And you know, that's why he was good. But when he added the sinker, everything came into place and, it really worked for him. And I see the Pirates selling Mitch Keller this year if somebody wants to buy.
Right.
I agree that, you know, right now he's hanging around the fifth spot ahead of guys like Oviedo and Jared Jones coming back.
Oh yeah.
And I like Burroughs. So like I agree that there's some risk there. I think if we redid this draft after, you know, a week or two later, I would have taken Imai there pretty easily.
Okay. I mean, Imai is one of those that's just like, okay, he's going up far higher. Yeah.
I should have taken
one of those. I didn't put my initial rankings out and I was like, I have a 40. I don't know if he gets or not. Like, I don't know. We'll see.
What I can do to sort of describe why my 17, 18, 19 picks look the way they do is I decided after Luis Castillo that every other pitcher I took was just going to be all upside. that I was just only focused on upside. These are the final pitchers on my list. If you think about your team, especially in a 12, but whatever, just generally, if you think about your starting rotation, your rotation in a fantasy league, the last three or four picks in any pick, any draft you're in, have like a 20% likelihood of making it through the season on your team.
Thank you so much, Eno.
Thank you, so, Eno. That is
you shouldn't be thinking about even year long. You shouldn't be looking at year long projections and be like, oh, I just added 150 innings or whatever. No, it's could this guy be amazing or not? And so Ashcraft was like, yes, I think he could be amazing early. Yes, that's another one I could have taken. I think I would have taken Imai if we re-racked this. Troy Melton is on that list where I'm just like, you know, yeah, I guess, but. He's a little bit more like Castillo. I could have taken him in the Castillo spot.
I mean, he had what, a 132 ERA this year, I think it was.
I know, but you know,
he's your boy Eovaldi.
I know, and I've been a high man on him a lot, but you know, there's also injury concerns. He's getting older, but Troy Melton, you know, everything looks like it should work.
Right,
it didn't produce the right strikeout rates, which bothers me. But yeah,
it bothers me too. It's like the Job thing a little bit, but
yeah, exactly. Better. If we didn't have Melton's Job, better. I'd be even more excited about Melton.
No, Melton is because he's coming with a near 7-foot extension, not 6 of Job. Mm. And there's just more to like around the board, I think, with Melton. But I do want to say, you know, preach it about this is not a best ball league. The number one mistake I see with drafters is they're not planning for what April looks like. And when you say chase upside, this is the biggest lesson I'm taking from this past year into the next one, is that upside comes in two variants. And we talked about it on the craft here, that it's not always just the strikeout guy. It's the, you know, getting the Matthew Boyd, getting the Merrill Kelly, getting the Noah Cameron, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys ended up in the player rater top 25 or something like that because they had consistent production. And those are also guys, say for Cameron, who went the opening weekend. And if they're, I'm going to try as hard as I can to not draft guys who are SP5s, which I know sounds crazy, but you have to wait longer to make a decision. And sometimes those guys get skipped even, and you're just like,
and if you have that 4-day week at the beginning of the week where you're setting maybe for a week or whatever, like, you know, they're not useful at all.
Right. So as much as you can to try to avoid that. And it's why I actually like Christian Javier more than Heelan Ashcraft, because he should be going relatively soon for the Astros. You'll get a good idea of what he's doing. And I think that's a seal of approval pick for me, because that's the perfect kind of guy. We'll get a good sense of him, I think. Mm-hmm, and there is very tangible upside to go for that. Right.
Yeah.
And then your 21st round is my favorite pick of your draft. Because
Spencer Arigate,
the pasta pirate, okay, he is, oh, it's perfect, because he was someone who just had a lost season, and I love taking guys who just had lost seasons, because you're drafting him in the 21st round, he could be gone the first week, who cares? But if he's healthy and pitching, you won't want to draft him. I'm sorry, you won't want to drop him.
Yeah,
it's that simple. Like, that's the binary thing of not just is he good or bad, it's like, is he healthy or not?
Yeah. Right.
I'll because take that decision, you know, making versus, process every day, you know,
versus like a Chad Patrick or a Merrill Kelly that went around there. You know, Merrill Kelly in particular, you're going to want to be like, oh, I want to hold this guy.
He's such a good record. That's the problem of it. Like, I'm banking that he's going to be fine. But I might
what be if he has like two bad starts to begin the season and he actually ends up being having a bad season? You might hold that way too long.
Yeah. Yes.
I think Arigetti will tell you pretty quickly, am I healthy? Or am I having surgery or whatever?
Yeah. I would have loved to flip that, taking Arigetti instead of Kelly, 100%.
And then, he was Kelly yours. I didn't mean to.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I give a face.
At least you got Painter. I love that one.
Oh, I hate that one. Can we trade? Okay.
Is he in the rotation or not?
I don't think so. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
You think they'll find somebody?
No. But I do not want to skip over Willie Abreu, because I obviously don't know the full take of it, and I want to hear it from you. We've got just a couple more minutes, and really it was a 20th round pick for Eno, Lucas Erceg. You're just saying, hey, hopefully he becomes a closer. Something happens there. Makes sense. With Kansas City and Clay Holmes, the Adobe, like, all right, maybe he's productive early on. I don't know. But
Willie Abreu, you know, he was really terrible against lefties, and then he was slightly terrible against lefties. And in 2025, he had an 85 WRC plus against lefties. And I know that's just a one-year split, and they weren't showing him lefties a lot. But at some point, you can't platoon a lot of places, and they were playing a lot of games. I think at some point, Willy Abreu might just start. And if it's a daily lineup, head-to-head league, he's a pretty good guy to just plug in, especially since all of my other guys have multi-eligibilities. Like,
oh, right. You know,
he could actually be my utility guy, which means I put him in at outfield and then move Novelvi to third or whatever it is, you know? So,
yep.
So I just thought this is a really good hitter that might end up playing more than people expect. I thought Lucas Urseg was, you know, might end up being the closer there. You know, I liked him better than, you know, I think Grant Taylor, they announced that he's going to be relieving, but he's sort of on the way to starting or something. So I doubt he's their closer. And picking a closer in like October, you know, picking a third closer in October is just awful. So I just went with the guy has good stuff on a team that may not go and buy another closer. So
right. I mean, generally what I do is I go for two if there's not a third really obvious one.
I might have been if Urseg hadn't been there, I probably just would have taken another starter. I probably would have ended with Mize and Clay Holmes, which are super boring, but I don't know the schedule. I didn't have the schedule in front of me, but if like Mize and Clay Holmes start the season at home, they could start for me in week one, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Now, it's really funny, you know, that you said I don't have the opening schedule in front of me, because if you guys go to the top 200 starting pitchers for 2026 on pitchers.com, written by some really smart gentleman, you will actually see the opening schedule for every single team. And the Tigers are at the Padres to open the year, and the Mets are hosting the Pirates. And then St. Louis.
I'm a genius because I took Clay Holmes to start against the Pirates week one.
Is Clay Holmes going to be playing one of the first three games of the year?
Yeah, that might be. We'll see.
Okay, right now, Noah McClain, David Peterson.
I mean, yeah, we're drafting in October.
Senga. You know, Joe Ryan will be
October,
there.
October, so like we don't. Holmes even be a Met, dude?
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. But that's gonna do for this one. I mean, really, like, you know, is there any major lesson you learned doing this draft that helped you for next drafts that you take?
Well, it's just make sure you have your values and your auction values in front of you, and like,
oh, cool. You learned this about the player pool. And like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I was learning in that one about second base, about that being difficult. And that I think there's a plethora of young, exciting starters. And I think you're just going to have to do your homework and make your decisions like about who you like, because if it's not the hype seven, you know, at the very top, well, there are a bunch of,
you got a name for it now, the hype seven. Yeah.
If it's not the hype seven at the top, then it's still going to be some young guys, you know, all the way through. Like Emmett Sheehan goes a little bit later than those guys.
Connelly, early Emmett Sheehan, Troy Melton are the others.
Yeah, make your decision. Do you like those guys? Look at their arsenals. Make your decision about what you value. Do you value larger arsenals with command? Do you value elite stuff? You know, you're a K-BB god, whatever it is. Like, you know, zero in on those and make your decisions, because those guys are going to be super important, and they're all over. And I think it's partly necessity because injuries are still at an all-time rate, and so they bring those up. But also, we have certain organizations that have put a lot of effort and time and money into improving their pitching development, and we're starting to see the fruits of some of that. I think of Boston producing, you know, Peyton Tolley and Connelly early, you know, after bringing on Kyle Bodie and, like, you know, really trying to revamp their situation there. So I think of the Mets when they're turning out, you know, guy after guy after guy, they have enough that they're trading Tidwell away. And, you know, so what's the next? And then the question for me is, like, what's the next great organization that's going to turn around their pitching development and start turning out pitchers like those did, because those are all sort of 3-4 years after they did the work. Now we're getting these pitchers. Is it going to be Toronto? They've done some work on their pitching development. St. Louis, hot take.
Colorado Rockies.
It is a hot take. I mean, you know who needs it is the Nationals, but how
that
long
is true. Well, I mean, made a large argument about like the Rockies should be essentially trading, developing pitching and signing hitting. That's the only way that they'll work because no pitcher wants to sign in Colorado.
They have the reverse.
So if there's any organization that has to focus on it, it has to be them. But anyway, you know, favorite pick outside of MI.
Of mine?
No. Someone else's on this board. You're like, oh my gosh, was it Austin Riley? I'm just gonna give you an out if you need one.
I think it might be, but I had to answer that in the thing, right?
Yes. This is what why you you answered the questions too, which is amazing.
Favorite
it's one of the later questions.
Favorite team. I had Eric Samulski.
Ooh.
I hear that. I said the places where he's weakest, a second reliever and third outfielder are easiest to fix.
Because he took Carlos Rodon and he hates his pitching. Because, I mean, he took the injured guy.
I said he didn't take enough starting pitchers.
Yeah.
But I mean, the ones he did take were super high ceiling. And then thoughts on my draft slot, favorite players. Oh, I think, you know, one thing that I did that was interesting was I kind of punted batting average a little bit. If you heard through like what I was talking about, I like I have O'Neill Cruz and Ozzie Albies, but I don't think Luis Arraez got taken.
That's a really good fill-in.
He's a guy just I'd throw in for Alan next 3 days to get some hits. Another thing you can do in head to head is punt. Like punt a
position. Well, the thing is, if you have a 260 average versus a 240, that's 26%, 24%. It's like, it's not nearly as divided and consistent.
Yeah, I might win some weeks by accident
with everybody, you know?
I might win some weeks by accident too, right?
Right, like, exactly. So like, think of it as like a 2-to-1 chance or something like that. That's pretty good actually for punting.
I got to find my three best picks. Jackson Merrill in the fifth round to Nick Pollock.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh my gosh, wow.
I think he'll get his legs back and be a force. Ninth round, Cade Smith.
Yeah, that was really good from Jay Crumpler. Of course he would know, doing in the pen all the time. He's like, Emmanuel Classe is never pitching again.
Yeah, and then Emi in the 18th. Yeah, that won't be possible soon.
Not a chance. All right, get out of here. Go travel. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Eno Saris, everybody, give him a round of applause. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be doing more episodes of The Craft. Obviously, we are going to have a rankings battle of some kind. We'll talk about two pitchers at a time just to see like why we're shifting one way or the other. I can't wait for that. At some point in December, I get to see this guy.
My rankings are in better shape than ever because of you.
Oh, because of me.
Yeah, because you said you had rankings for first pitch. So I was like, dang, I got to have some rankings. So I put
together. Oh, my gosh. Look at that.
Earliest I've ever had rankings.
Well, it makes it so much easier moving forward. Now you kind of have like a baseline.
It is nice because I can, when we talk about stuff on the pod or whatever, I can move guys up and down. I'm working on it all the time. When they get traded, I can move them up or down.
You're welcome, Eno, and you're welcome everybody listening who obviously reads Eno's rankings. Even though I have a very busy December, we will find time to do one show at least. There, we'll talk.
Oh,
about
do
that.
You? Do you have something going on?
Yeah, I'm attending some wedding. You know.
Oh, that's funny. Me too. In New York.
Oh man.
In December.
It'll
be beautiful.
December 20th. This is going to be great. We have a magician, Eno. We have a magician.
I will have fun.
Yes, you will.
You will be like, you'll be so exhausted from talking to people. You'll get,
oh, I know.
The thing about the wedding is you get like 5 minutes with everybody and you want to squeeze the most juice out of 5 minutes. And it's so exhausting.
Well, you know what? I feel like I'm built for this, you know, I have hosted PitchCon. I can do this. All right, but that's
just line them up, baby. 5 minutes each. Here we go.
Oh my god! All right, thank you so much, Ian, for joining us. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about The Craft of Pitching again next week.